like, you know, or whatever, like, boo, like whatever. You know, it's like, you know, whatever, you know, and like, or whatever, like, just like, it's like, it's like this, like.
Welcome to the show, folks. We're going to get to some stats on that montage and AOC's performance at South by Southwest a little later in the show, so hang on for that. But it is National Pancake Day, something you can't eat right now, Disco.
No, just to cannot.
Let you know. We're going to have a big stack of pancakes brought in just to tease you. It's also National Girl Scouts Day, and speaking of Girl Scouts, we are going to talk a little bit more about AOC right now because she tweeted this out about the Girl Scouts. Can we bring that up?
Yeah, here you go.
So, at Girl Scouts is how I first practiced how to change brake fluid, I doubt it, start a fire, practice self-defense, recreate the NASA Challenger mission, and very importantly, learn to teach myself new skills plus navigate ambiguity. There's a reason a large of congresswomen are former scouts. Okay, what do you boys make of that? I mean, first of all, I would be shocked. I'm not saying that I can do everything perfectly. I can't. Newsflash. Just a common pale Viking man with adequate skills in a few things. But I guarantee you she can't do all those things.
I like the navigate ambiguity.
Yes.
Because that clip before it showed exactly how well she navigates ambiguity.
Yes.
Well,
No. Good
public
point.
Public speaking 101.
Good point.
No.
Why do we want? Like, are they like, recreating the Challenger flight? Rest in peace, flying American. To break it down on what happened? Like, wouldn't you want to recreate one that's
like a successful mission?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Like
Apollo 11.
There's people still in counseling who are watching. Yeah. Look at the. Oh, I mean that's yeah. That was a terrifying. I remember that day. I don't even know if she was alive that day. But
why would you want to create the NASA Challenger experience?
Yeah. Don't know.
That part I don't understand.
Doesn't make sense.
My thing is my favorite one here. It's change brake fluid. I do my own brakes. You don't change brake fluid. You bleed the lines and then you add more. So
well, and what are they teaching in the Girl Scouts these days? I know that girls are now Boy Scouts, and there's all sorts of confusion there. But
yes.
I'm asking this question genuinely. Do Girl Scouts really learn to service vehicles? Like, is that?
I don't think the Boy Scouts learn to change.
No, like
fluid.
You could be an Eagle Scout and you learn how to survive and this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
But you're not a mechanic.
No, that's a very valid point.
I mean, maybe I'm just missing something. I miss a lot of things.
Yeah.
But
so,
we're learning from AOC. So
We're learning. I mean, she's like,
you know,
so amazing. So, anyways, great show today. Conservative commentator, someone who actually does have a brain, former CIA officer and host of the Buck Sexton Show. Buck Sexton will be here. Also, our good friend and host of Gun Freedom Radio, Cheryl Todd, will join us to discuss some Second Amendment news. But for now, let's take a trip across the headlines.
Yeah, let's do it.
So Fox News host Tucker Carlson responded directly to Media Matters for America and their recent aggressive, might I add, attempts to derail his evening show by unearthing comments he made over a decade ago on a shock jock radio show. He tweeted this out. I think we've got the tweet. Media Matters caught me saying something naughty on a radio show more than a decade ago. Rather than express the usual ritual contrition. Okay, sorry, I'm saying that wrong. Yeah, it's a long day. How about this? I'm on television every weeknight, live for an hour. If you want to know what I think, you can watch. Anyone who disagrees with my views is welcome to come on and explain why. So he's come out and defended himself. First of all, we all know this is ridiculous. These are the type of mudslinging attempts that the left and organization like Media Matters try to utilize. It's one of their top plays in their playbook. But, you know, again, this is 10 years ago. Context matters. And also, you know, the whole judgment thing matters here. You cast the first stone. Like, my whole thing is, if you're perfect, then by all means, come out and judge people. We're not supposed to, and by the way, you're not perfect, so you shouldn't be judging people. And he, you know, comments that I look, I say stuff on the show every day. I'm like, whoops, shouldn't have said that. But like, but it's just, this is reality. This is life. This is a casual late night show. We have a good time with it. He was on a shock jock radio show. Like, so, I mean,
Bubba Love Sponge.
Yeah.
He was on it. Yeah. And he was sitting there talking. I think.
Did you say Love Sponge?
Bubba the Love Sponge.
Oh, okay.
Have you never heard of that before?
No, never.
Yeah.
It was a big show.
I don't even know what the whole thing premise was behind it. Was he talking about women? Was he talking about.
I don't remember the exact comment that they're going
after. There's a lot of things that are coming out about, you know, sexism, this and that. But he made a good quote, and I had to write it down. He said, "Why are the people who considered Bill Clinton a hero lecturing me on sexism?"
Good point. Good point, so, Tucker. Yeah, well, here's the other thing.
Guns.
You know he's going to stick to his guns. You know Fox is going to stay behind him, which they have so far. I guess you didn't know that, but you've seen now that they are, which is great. They, I think, after kind of buckling early on with some of these, you know, people have lobbed all sorts of claims and statements over the fence about things that their show hosts have done. They've buckled on some, and some people are no longer working there. But they've stood up more. They stood up for Laura. They're standing up for Tucker. And I think that it's good to see that. And why would you pick a fight with Tucker Carlson? He will shred. Like, I would never argue. We agree on almost everything. But I would never argue with Tucker Carlson.
And he won't care either. He'll just say his point. If not, he's going trout fishing.
Yeah.
As we, you know, there it is.
Yeah.
Hey, you want me off? They kick me off? Whatever. I am not bowing down, as he said, to apologize to Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I'm glad you said that because he's got a so I encourage you to, if you haven't watched his show, or watched last night's episode, rather, to go and find this full clip. We've got an extended clip here of kind of his opening monologue. He came right out the gates going after Media Matters. Take a look.
The left's main goal, in case you haven't noticed, is controlling what you think. In order to do that, they have to control the information that you receive. Google and Facebook and Twitter are fully on board with that. They're happy to ban unapproved thoughts, and they don't apologize for it. They often do. So do the other cable channels and virtually every major news outlet in this country. One of the only places left in the United States where independent thoughts are allowed is right here, the Opinion Hours on this network. Just a few hours in a sea of television programming. It's not much, relatively speaking. For the left, it's unacceptable. They demand total conformity. Since the day we went on the air, they've been working hard to kill this show. We haven't said much about it in public. It seemed too self-referential. The point of this show has never been us. But now it's obvious to everybody. There's no pretending that it's not happening. It is happening. And so going forward, we'll be covering their efforts to make us be quiet. For now, though, just two points to leave you with. First, Fox News is behind us, as they have been since the very first day. Toughness is a rare quality at a TV network, and we are grateful for that. Second, we've always apologized when we're wrong, and we'll continue to do that. That's what decent people do. They apologize. But we will never bow to the mob. Ever. No matter what.
I love it. Never, and nor should you, Tucker. And good on you for saying all that. And it is, it's so, like he said, this is the left's plan. They want total conformity, and you don't get it, you don't agree with them, and they unleash the hounds. And I shouldn't say hounds because the left, I feel like most of them aren't dog people, they're more cat people. But they unleash something, and they're not happy about it.
The cats just doesn't roll off the tongue.
It doesn't roll off the tongue. Yeah, they released the Persian cats.
Wolf dog.
Yeah, the wolf dog, that picture of that wolf dog, pretty amazing. Impressive. Anyways, I'm proud of Tucker for standing his ground. I really do enjoy his show. We have no affiliation with them. It's just me saying it. But I think we can all agree he's a super smart dude. Sticks to his guns, is a man of principle, and I love it. But Grabian, so at the beginning of the show, Grabian, the publication, did us a solid and created the video we opened the show with, that whole montage. And we mentioned her points in the show yesterday about automation, how people shouldn't worry about losing their jobs. It's a good thing. Go focus on your hobbies. And all sorts of other nuggets that she came out with. You know, Reagan's a racist, apparently, according to AOC. But how about some stats here? So this is pretty impressive. New York's freshman congresswoman, AOC, has, like, a lot to say. And over the course of the 80-minute interview at South by Southwest that we've talked about ad nauseum now, she let loose a litany of likes, you knows, and whatevers in between America, calling America garbage, capitalism irredeemable, and President Reagan, as we just mentioned a second ago, racist. She said this. Are you guys ready for these stats?
Okay.
Let's bring them. She said, like, no fewer than 71 times.
Wow.
She said, you know, at least 34 times, and whatever, 5 times. She also said, too many times, as Grabian would say, for them to count, which I'll give her some credit on that. Is colloquial. Yeah, I say it a lot. It's easy to slip in. It's just part of normal discussion. But saying like 71 times, like if that's not some Valley Girl shit right there.
I was going to say, I
don't know
it's
what
a Valley
is.
Girl.
Yeah. I mean, that's totally clueless, which... maybe I enjoy it
you
as a movie.
You can say like in conversation. I get that. You can go back and forth like in this, but you're in office.
Yeah.
You're spelling your points. To spell.
Yes.
You know, it's a good one.
Yeah.
Over and over again. But when you're talking to someone like that, when you're like, well, you know, you're not there. You're not focused. You're not, you know, entrenched in your beliefs. You're just trying to talk to the audience the way they want to hear it. And that's the whole thing. They want to just talk to the audience the way they're talking.
Well, yeah. And I can understand it slipping in if it's something off the cuff, you know, like you said, a personal conversation. But these questions should have been vetted to her, and she should have had these answers ready to go. Maybe she didn't do her homework, and that's her problem. That's her own problem.
But you're not always going to have the questions given to you, like CNN gave Hillary for the debates. Like you need to be able to, as you're saying, like you need to be able to just respond. Like you should have a coach. Like someone should be coaching her in her camp, saying, "Look, honey." You got to say whatever, all those less. Like, you've just – get a speech coach. Look, I'm not saying it's easy. It's not easy. But
4 times you said like.
So, thank you. Thanks for counting my likes. So, but I probably need one too. But point is, like, you're an elected official, like Mike said.
Right.
You need to focus on excelling. Like, right now, her – campaign, we joked the other day about her saying she's going to run for president in 2021, which of course is impossible because of her age and there's no election, but you could totally see her campaign slogan being AOC 2021, like totally. Like
sure.
that's
you
her.
Know.
Like, can we get that shirt made?
Done.
Okay.
I'll draw it up today. And we'll get it made.
But that's
there's hard beliefs in your points. If this is what you stand up, these are questions that she's answered before about things and what she believes in and what direction of the country. If you're not believing in them, that's when you get the the likes.
Right.
This
it's not your
well,
passion,
maybe.
Exactly.
It's like, okay, we're just talking to talk at this point in time.
Yeah.
Instead of having a cogent point.
Cogent. So cogent of you. So speaking of passion, some people are really passionate about meat. They just are. That's the only segue I could think of there.
That was pretty good, though. I love meat.
I love meat, too. I'm hoping that tonight there'll be a hot, sizzling steak. Just with some salt and butter on top. That's all you need.
Sounds delicious.
But speaking of meat, there'll be no mystery meat or any other meat on Mondays at New York City public schools. This I decree, said Mayor Bill de Blasio. Why, you ask? Well, damn good question. Because according to Mayor Bill de Blasio, quote, cutting back on meat a little will improve New Yorkers' health and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. He continued, we're expanding Meatless Mondays to all public schools to keep our lunch and planet green for generations to come. And I say this, look, I'm all for parents sending lunch with their kids. So first, you know, just getting that out. I also get that most people are busy. It takes time to get the lunch prepared, and especially if it's a healthy lunch, if you're putting some thought into it. But if you're gonna, like, if you're gonna go this way and you're gonna mail it in, and have them eat garbage at the school, they still shouldn't be, like, the whole argument to me just, it loses me early on. Like, and we texted about this last night, you know, the phones come out after work and we start
about to kill each other.
Yeah, I thought that we were going to have an EEO complaint coming in. And I did, to be fair, I loved Square, I grew up taking my lunch. Square pizza was great. I don't think any of the ingredients were real. But
you had plastic on the bottom of it.
Yeah.
It came off in the oven.
Yeah.
You're eating plastic pizza.
Plastic pizza. With, like, minced meat that might have been sausage, but probably wasn't sausage.
Emu.
So we know that lunches aren't healthy or good at school. They're just not. So the first thing is, you know, I know you're busy, parents, but try and get off your ass and give your kids a packed lunch that is healthy and good. I mean, you can send stuff that's still fun. Like, they're not going to be like, you want to trade for my my rice cake? Like, you can send some good stuff. But thinking that this is going to make significant impact on the farce that is climate change is totally remarkable to me. Remarkable. I mean, I give de Blasio credit for being ignorant enough to think that this is, like, something that's real and he can say it out loud like this. But I give no credit to those who actually agreed with it and are applauding the decision, because it's just absurd. Hey, we're going to change greenhouse gases and he didn't say we're going to solve climate change, but we're going to make significant impact by going with Meatless Mondays.
Well, here's my question. Is it just for in the school? Like when for people who get, you know, have the lunches, need the lunches? Or is it a ban against all meat from parents sending their kids to lunch, sending lunches
it's,
to school?
It's just, my understanding right now, it's just the school will not serve meat on Mondays. So if you bring in a steak or a ham sandwich, that's on you. That's your choice.
So does that not ostracize the kids that can't afford, you know, the meat that the parents bring in? Now you're eating vegetables for lunch. Doesn't it segregate them from the other students?
Sure, but they won't see it that way.
I'm just saying, it's like, okay, you can't afford your lunch. You're getting vegetables today. But you know, Sammy over here brought himself a steak tartare sandwich.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he would do that tartare.
So good.
Why that just
most kids don't eat steak tartare,
no,
to be clear.
No,
but
no.
But
you get my point. Or bring a ribeye in on a sandwich. And
gosh, stop talking about meat. I'm going to skip the next story.
That's where I was just getting at last night in our heated text was just that it starts here with the school, but then it's going to be one kid's going to be singled out. He's going to be singled out, a teacher is going to say, "Oh, you need to bring food just like everyone else because they have, you know, like you're different than everyone else." And that, to me, is going to drive me crazy.
To be clear, you were the one getting heated last night on the text. Disco got all bent out of shape. Yeah. But no one
tells my kid what they can and cannot eat other than me.
Yeah, well, and they didn't, because if you're sending your kid with lunch. So, I mean, the flip side is there's some faux outrage on this, too. They're not saying your kid can't eat meat on Mondays. That might come. But right now, they're just saying, on Mondays, we're not serving meat, which is stupid. And it's not going to make any impact on climate change, which is not what you're telling people it is in the first place. But Disco did get heated, and then Abigail gets heated. And guys, you don't screw with Abigail. I'm terrified of Abigail. Like, you just don't do
Look
it.
At, she's ignoring us right
she,
now.
Yeah, she is. She's pretending she doesn't have an ear, and she totally does, people. Anywho, we'll move on from meat. Parents, take some time. Pack your kids' lunches so they get something better, and then they can eat whatever the hell they want in New York public schools on Mondays. But this next one I just found too entertaining to not touch on. This woman, Kimberly Latham Hawksford, I think I said your name right. I apologize if I didn't. She's from England, and she went on a disastrous date with a man she met on Tinder in December. 3 months later, the individual she went on a date with, and let's be honest, this is Tinder. It's not a date. It's just a hookup.
Is that the swipe right and left one? That's what
the youngsters call it. It's basically, hey, would you like to have sex tonight? It's Thursday. That's what Tinder is. I know I'm simplifying it, but that's what we're going with. But the date, as she called it, allegedly sent her a very lengthy set of improvements for her to make before their next meeting. So let's go ahead and pull this up, Disco, and go through these savage remarks because they're pretty fascinating. So
these are snaps from Snapchat.
These are snaps from Snapchat. Yeah. Thank you for clarifying. So we've got some highlights here. If you lost some weight, you would look incredible. Maybe a stone or so. Of course, people in the UK refer to weight and pounds and stones. You have quite big boobs. You should show off your cleavage more. I think you should wear clothes that suit your figure and maybe update your style slightly, just so I'm not embarrassed to be seen with you.
I
could hear Jesse saying that. That's a great comment. You need to dye your hair a normal color and add extensions. Longer hair is much more attractive. Mike, you've got a few. You want to highlight a couple?
I picked a few out because, you know. Here's one of my favorites. You need to keep your past to a minimum. I don't care about it and what you went through.
That is awesome.
That's a great way to start a relationship.
Yeah, hey, absolutely.
Let's go on a second date, but I don't care about who you were. And just one more, just for you.
Okay.
The fact you take things slow makes you look like a prude. I didn't get a kiss, which messed with my ego. Be more sensitive to others' feelings. I would have set up another date to just punch him in the face.
Yeah.
And go...
Swift
now, how
kick to
feelings?
The balls. Yeah.
How's your ego now? You just got smacked by, you know, beat down by her. And by the way, you suck.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the gall.
Yeah.
I was reading this laughing going, I hope she took this with a grain of salt and then just threw it out on social media to just, what do they call them? The kids call them this day? Dox or whatever? The dox.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's pretty amazing. She also said, he said, when we had food, and then he made an emoticon face, I know you got a salad, but having full-fat Coke, i.e. regular Coke, is more calories you really don't need. You need to look more natural. Stop wearing makeup. Just make yourself look decent, but don't overkill it. So, I mean, he keeps going on.
You just seemed a bit stuck up. Sort your personality out.
Yes.
And then at the end, listed an option for another date.
Yes.
If you can take care of these issues.
Go ahead and check these off, and we'll talk about doing this
I will give
this
you
again.
A month and get back in touch to see if this made a difference. Good day to you, Kimberly.
I say good day. Anyway, that's just it.
Yeah, I mean, the list keeps going. Again, you can search on Google or whatever and find this. But pretty amazing. I suggest not going on Tinder. I know some people are desperate, but you could do other things. And also, I would suggest not dating someone like this. I mean, this is...
Where could that possibly go?
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? He made some fine points. Let me take care of myself.
Yeah.
And you know what? Then I'll have a healthy relationship moving forward with this young man.
Yeah. Either the fine ladies in the control room, would you go on another date and give this man a chance?
I got a note from Kayla.
Got a note
again.
From Kayla. Abigail's ignoring us. Yeah. She's still mad at us over the meat thing. Okay, so we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Buck Sexton. Stick around. Welcome back, folks. So some of you may have seen this yesterday. RAND analyst David Ochmanek. I don't know if I said his name right. Ochmanek, Ochma, what do you... But anyways, smart dude, said this, quote, in our games, referring to simulated World War III scenarios, when we fight Russia and China, blue, meaning America, gets its ass handed to it. He continued to say this, we lose a lot of people, we lose a lot of equipment, we usually fail to achieve our objectives, preventing aggression by the adversary. Joining us to discuss this is conservative commentator, former CIA officer, and host of the Buck Sexton Show, Buck Sexton. Buck, good to see you, man.
Hey, Drew, great to see you.
So, first of all, let's do this, because we hung out last week at, at CPAC. So it was great to do that. I wish we had cocktails right now. But what were your impressions of the event?
Look, I think it's great whenever you get a lot of people together in that kind of a forum, not just for the speeches, the stuff you get to hear, but also because for a lot of folks, you know, we know each other professionally in conservative media, but we're spread all across the country. So CPAC is a time when there are people who show up that I've had on radio dozens of times, and I feel like I know them, and we, you know, correspond and have exchanges, but I actually get to meet them as a real human person for the first time at CPAC. So that's a lot of fun. And in terms of what goes on there, I mean, the energy and the array of topics on that, and people, you really gotta, this is going to be a cliche, you got to see it to know it, you know, I mean, you got to be there to pick up on all that. And then there are the fun unofficial breakout sessions, like the one you, me, and a bunch of other folks had, where there are cocktails and stories involved, which is where some of the, maybe not the best policy discussions happen, but the best overall discussions happen.
Absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more. It was our first time up there, you know, because we're still pretty new in the whole media thing. And it just was a blast. It was like you said, putting a face with a name and then connecting for those extraordinary sessions on the side that were great and super fun. But back on task here. So with this story, so you're an analyst and have a huge brain, smart dude, great head of hair, by the way, too.
Thank you. It's a little ungainly. It's a little out of control today. But you're the way you do it is that's the clean and. You know,
I'd say it's the smart way to do it, but it's really just the only option I have. But it is what it is. I mean, I'd kill to have yours. But
I got to grow out. Look at this. This is bad for me because you also have like a reddish. You got a man beard. I got a little baby beard. Like I'm trying to buy cerveza at the grocery store beard. And that's not the way it's going. You know, trying to look 18 or 21 rather, not 18.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, that's not going to get you anywhere.
That's not going to cut it.
That's not going to cut it. This is my Viking ancestors coming. I don't know why it's red. Nothing else in my body is red. Just for those of you guys wondering, under here, everything, not red. But this is red. But this story, so speaking of Red, Red is one of the players in this whole, you know, war game. And some analysts within these war games, Red being China or the aggressors in this case, think that the next world war could come as soon as the mid-2020s. Not sure if I'm behind that, but would like to get your thoughts on it. And it would involve all five battlefield domains, land, sea, air, space, and cyberspace. They further suggest we might struggle to maintain superiority throughout this whole conflict. What are your thoughts on all of this?
Well, look, I think we're heading for some kind of conflict with China. I just think if you look at it from a historical perspective and the cyclical nature of conflict between major nations, major world powers, we're heading for a rough situation with China. I wish I could tell you I knew exactly what it would be. I mean, the obvious flashpoints: Taiwan, South China Sea, maybe something that happens with North Korea, that all of a sudden China becomes much more involved. I mean, that's all very much there. And look, I looked at this from the perspective of an analyst at the agency, and obviously you're a guy who's ex-mil, so you've seen what the kind of wars are that we've been fighting, and we've really been fighting wars of stabilization and what are essentially counterterrorism operations on steroids in a lot of cases. I mean, we have not been fighting conventional military fight in a long time. And that, I think, is something that just psychologically, I'm not sure the American people are prepared for. I mean, the control we are used to having in the battle space, for example, nobody is ever worried when they're calling in airstrikes against the Taliban that the Taliban's going to call in a bunch of MiGs and blow our planes out of the sky. You know, when you start talking about conflict with China, that obviously becomes a reality. And then when you add into it their very large population and the long-term planning and preparation that they've engaged in, I think, to challenge us as the hegemon, we should have real concern. So I don't know if, as a country, we're psychologically ready for that kind of a conflict. I think that there's also concerns about our willingness to fight that sort of fight, I think, is also an issue. And China is the main threat, though. The people that talk about Russia all the time, I mean, that's just because Hillary lost the last election. I mean, that's nothing.
Right.
Russia's economy is like a fifth of the size or a tenth of the size of ours. I mean, it's a fraction of what ours is. They've got problems. They can throw some weight around in Ukraine and in some place in the Mideast, but it's just not going to be the issue people think it is.
Yeah. No, I think you're, well, and for Russia, I think you're definitely right. I think that Putin talks a great game, and I love that in that sense. He's kind of a baller. Like, he doesn't back down. What they can actually, you know, back up and sustain, behind all that rhetoric is TBD. What's interesting, though, is, so right now, you know, in terms of, like, from, and this is my small brain saying this, you know, I had my role in the government and you had yours, but in terms of the equipment, like, it seems like we're ahead of the curve. You know, obviously part of the war that's been going on that you referenced between us and China is they're going after our tech. There's tons of cyber attacks going after our technology so they can replicate and or improve for themselves. Right now, it sounds like we're ahead of the curve. They're saying that could change down the road. But, I mean, we don't have to get super technical here, but how fast do you think our opponents, and namely China, are making gains on us?
Well, I think this is the biggest untold national security story out there, or I should say maybe it's not covered as much as it should be, and there's not nearly as much focus on it as there should be. But the reality here is that China has been engaging in what I've called a civilization-changing level of theft of the most sensitive technology we have. And that's not just military technology, but it certainly includes that. You also throw into the mix commercial secrets. I mean, we have an information, and increasingly will be an AI-based economy going forward. So our information advantage on these matters is essential. And when you have a power like China that has been pilfering from us at a scale that I think people, I have a hard time trying to wrap my brain around, just from what you see in the open source and on the front page of the newspapers, there's cyber attacks going on every day. And when you see some of these massive successful cyber intrusions where they're taking, you know, gigs and gigs of data, you got to think to yourself, well, why do we assume that they won't be able to either just replicate what we're doing in a lot of ways, or even reverse engineer and then use against us some of the tech that they've stolen, which is a big concern. You see this also with our concerns over companies like Huawei and these Chinese telecom giants and others out there, robotics and those that make parts for electronics. What are they doing with all that stuff? There are major concerns about that, and there's good reason for those concerns. And just for a way of perspective with the folks watching, one of my favorite books to recommend that people read on the Cold War and the U.S. and the Soviets and what was really going on there is the sword and the shield, which is essentially the Matrokhin archive, which is named for a guy named Vasily Matrokhin, who opened up the KGB's archives after the fall of the wall. And this guy Drew walked into, I think it was first the American embassy and then the British embassy. He's like, "Hey, I'm the KGB's archivist. Do you guys want all my stuff? Because I've got it." And I think we said, "Nah," which sounds like America. We're like, "Nah, we don't trust you, buddy." The Brits were like, "Yeah, we'll take a look at that." And he published a lot of it in his Matrokhin archive. I bring it up just because the amount of theft of sensitive military technology, diplomatic secrets that went on during the Cold War, when we really saw it, was mind-boggling and allowed the Soviets to have much closer military parity with us than they would have otherwise. We obviously know about the nuclear program, the theft there. I'm telling you, if people knew how much had been stolen, I know you know this, but the folks at home, people knew how much China has already stolen from us, their jaws would drop to the floor.
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree more, because they are so damn aggressive and they're good at it. I mean, again, I'll give props to enemies when they deserve it. We still want to crush you if it comes down to a battle. But hey, when you're doing a good job of accomplishing your mission, I'll give you props. And they do a great job at that. What scares me too, kind of last question here before we go, is, okay, we're better as it stands now. We're better than either one of these foes if you stack us up against them. You know, most people, the prevailing logic think, you know, would be that these two pair up to go after us. And that's what these war games are here that we're discussing, and several other scenarios that have been thrown out there, is it's Russia and China against the U.S. My question here is, okay, obviously that's kind of a daunting task, just because there's a hell of a lot of little Chinese guys running around in their army. They've got, you know, a ton of them. Russia, you merge all that together, and it just complicates things for us. But who joins us? You know, how does the rest of the world fall in line in this epic, you know, Red Dawn sequel of a story?
Well, you'd certainly like to think that, you know, our European allies will be there for the fight. I mean, I think that at the very top of the list, when push comes to the shove, when push comes to shove, or to the shove, whichever.
Either way, we
all know what the countries are that are there with us and that have had soldiers out there with us in the most important ways and in the toughest fights. I mean, you're looking at Canada, Australia, the United Kingdom. You know, these are, you know, the Kiwis, the Aussies. Obviously, they're all sending out troops for us, stretching back now for many conflicts, and they're not out there, you know, just trying to keep the peace somewhere or, you know, making sandwiches behind the lines. I mean, they're putting out obviously top units that are working alongside guys like you out there. Could I say that we could count on all the European nations to come alongside with us? I mean, it really depends on what the mood is of some of these countries. And I wonder, I mentioned before, do we have the will to fight a major conflict with a large industrialized country with advanced technology that's at least close to our technology? I think it's an open question. I don't think there are a lot. I think there are a lot of European countries that honestly just wouldn't have the stomach for casualties and would rather quit than actually get into it. And now we're, you know, I know we're getting kind of down the rabbit hole here with a future that we can't really foresee, but, you know, I wouldn't count on the Italians to be like, "Yeah, we'll be on the front lines. Drew, you and your guys, you go hang back at base camp." I wouldn't make right. that calculation if we went into war with China and North Korea and a few other places.
Yeah, well, because it is. It's so different. Like, you referenced the Taliban earlier. You know, the level of threats and concern, obviously there's threats. People, we've lost a lot of lives overseas in Iraq, Afghanistan, Horn of Africa, et cetera. But they're coming in from the outside. It's a totally different thing. Like, yeah, we're going to go squash these guys over here who do pose a threat to our homeland, but we're going to kill them rather easily. We're going to take some casualties, not a lot. This is a whole different animal. This is epic. It's on a huge epic scale. And I'll also say this, that sandwich maker is important. We all got to eat.
Absolutely. Logistics is critical. You know, I got to keep you warfighters fed, my man.
That's right. That's right.
And fed with analysis. Important frontline memos sent right to your computer via the secure line. That's how we do.
Absolutely. Well, and clearly, I'm good on the sandwich front. This transition to the civilian life is painful. But Buck, we gotta run. Thanks so much for being here, man. It's great to get your input on this, and great to see you. We'll look forward to having you back.
Keep that scotch ready for me on the couch. I'm coming down to Florida.
You got it. You got it, folks. You'll see him down here. Also, be sure to check out the show if you don't already. You can listen 24/7 on iHeartRadio on their app there, or you can visit bucksexton.com. On the other side of the break, we'll be joined by Cheryl Todd, the host of Gun Freedom Radio. Stick around. All right, welcome back, folks. So this is some good news. There's a Senate bill proposal that would reclassify many older guns and make them more accessible to collectors and those who have an interest in preserving history, to include museums who currently have to maintain federal firearm licenses in order to house historic firearms that are newer than 1898. This is an expensive and time-demanding process that museums do not need to deal with for any of the other items that they display. So this would be obviously a huge win for them. Currently, the arbitrary date of antique guns is those made in the year of 1898 or before. The bill would propose that the designation of age is more reasonably and realistically altered to be items that are 100 years old based on the date of manufacture. Joining us to discuss this is our good friend and host of Gun Freedom Radio, Cheryl Todd. Cheryl, good to see you.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. Well, it's always good to have you, and particularly when we're talking about firearms, because you live in this world and own an auction house yourself. What are your overall impressions of this effort and kind of what it would do for the community?
I think it's 100% appropriate and needed. And it's also an exciting and positive thing that those of us who are advocates for our constitutional Second Amendment rights can really get behind. So often the other side makes these great, big, huge asks or leaps, and all of their proponents just jump right on them, and then we're constantly scrambling to catch up. Well, this is a very proactive step that we can take to help preserve history, to help people get to interact with history in such a way that there are the more impediments there are, whether it's expense, whether it's a time delay, whatever the case may be, the more impediments you put between ordinary citizens and the history and the civics lessons that are so lacking in our world these days, the less people can even make sound decisions about whatever that the issue is. And in this case, it's firearms. It's, what happened previously. Firearms are more than just tools of self-defense. They're technology. They are artwork. They are history, American history. And so many museums just don't even want to deal with all of the paperwork and the audits and everything else that comes along with trying to house a firearms collection and try to help tell the history of, let's say, the Civil War, World War I, or World War II, whatever the case may be. They don't even want to go through the difficulties that are involved in having these collections and telling that history. And so you'll go through an entire museum and you'll lack a whole huge piece of history if they don't have access to firearms.
Yeah, I mean, I'm, as this may come as a surprise to you, but I'm no museum curator. But I imagine that would, drastically change things, because no one likes paperwork. No one likes dealing with regulations and audits, as you've said. So that would be a huge deal for them. And I hope that for that reason and many others that it goes through. I remember also coming back, even bringing stuff overseas back. If a lot of folks would like to bring back, actual. They were no longer active, but older weapons from Afghanistan, Iraq, etc. Mm-hmm. But the same rule applied. If you couldn't document what it was, and it was it didn't fall within that figure, using 1898 as the benchmark, you couldn't do it. So it's just kind of silly, because it's like some of these are so old, they're not functional. They're clearly just trophies and relics that are for display only. But that brings me to this point, using 1898, like so many laws in the government, choosing that year, 1898, was purely arbitrary, correct? Or am I missing something?
It doesn't apply to any huge leap forward in technological advances in firearms. I mean, it really does seem to be, it was 1968, so they're like, all right, anything 70 years older, well, we'll call that an antique. Well, in the antiques business, which my husband and I have also been in for most of our life, and we do have an auction house now, the phrase antique, the word antique, refers to things 100 years old or older. I don't know where this 70-year designation came in, but as you said, when it comes to government regulations and especially things that have to do with firearms, there's no logic. The logic train is jumping its tracks all the time.
Yeah, for sure. Well, so just again, this is kind of a broad, you know, stroke question here, but how big of a win? Take museum. I mean, museums are a huge part of this. You know, collectors, huge part of this. But how big of a win would this be for the Second Amendment community, just writ large?
Huge, because if you read the Second Amendment, you know, it's 27 entire words. So I think you can fit that into your day.
I encourage you to check
that out. It's the only place in the Bill of Rights that our founding fathers thought to add the clause, shall not be infringed. The only time. So for me, it was kind of like, here's gun rights for dummies. You can't screw this up. You can't misunderstand, misconstrue. And so there's no asterisks, right? Shall not be infringed unless somebody somewhere did something awful with a firearm. Shall not be infringed unless it was made yesterday instead of 70 years or 100 years ago. It just says shall not be infringed. And so it's a step in the right direction to reconnect us as a citizenry with what our founding fathers originally envisioned for us and tried, I mean, blood, sweat, tears, really fought for to secure for us. And that is our freedoms, unfettered.
Yeah. Well, we so often see the slippery slope of, you know, the anti-gun lobby and folks who are opposed to the Second Amendment and everything else going after it. And we talk about that. You and I have talked about it a lot, is we're going down that path, and you give them an inch, they're going to take a mile. It's good on the flip side to see some little victories. So hopefully this goes through, because some little victories start to, you know, help us a lot as well and are huge for the Second Amendment. But we've got to run. Cheryl, thanks so much for being here. Keep up the great work. We always love having you as usual.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Big thanks to Cheryl again. Also, Buck Sexton for being here earlier in the show. Also to you, the audience. We appreciate you hanging with us. And we always say this. I know I'm like a broken record here, but we truly do have great shows planned the rest of the week. Jay Hill's going to be here. Hank Barb from Three Beards, Katie Thulin, and several others will be joining us. So don't miss an episode. And remember, when it comes to your news and political commentary, experience matters. See you tomorrow.